May it please the court, Justice Harlan, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgely. This is the time set for the oral argument on the appeal of the appellant Bryce Hall as a result of his conviction for one count of assault in a detention facility. The case has had varied procedural history. There was a direct appeal to Rule 226C briefs which were submitted and struck, and finally I was appointed as counsel. The issue in this case is whether or not Mr. Hall received a fair trial as a result of a pure and impartial, unbiased jury. The question became apparent when a juror.
Now, what's the legal question?
The legal question is whether or not the trial court committed plain error by failing to remove juror number 11 after it was discovered in the middle of trial that he was a correctional guard at the same facility where Mr. Hall was being housed.
Is your position regarding correctional officers, police, law enforcement personnel, that there's an occupational disqualifier, or is it one that each case is examined individually and credibility determinations are made and then the judge decides?
It's our position that there's no blanket prohibition of correctional officers, law enforcement personnel from serving on a jury. Each case must hinge on its own facts. In the case of Barr, there was insufficient facts developed by the trial court which would elicit the fact that there was a presumption that the officer who was seated on the jury had personal knowledge and facts which would have prohibited him from being on the jury.
Now, where does this presumption, presumption's a legal term, so what's the source for any presumption in this circumstance?
Well, it was developed at the remand hearing that Mr. Baskow was a correctional guard at the on the same tier, on the same cell block, prior to the trial that the accused was housed on. So Mr. Baskow failed to reveal to the trial court, either during the prior to the voir dire, at the initial voir dire, that he was a correctional guard, notwithstanding the fact that correctional guards' names were listed as witnesses. Once that record was developed at the remand hearing, it's inconceivable that any trial court judge would have allowed that juror to continue to remain on a panel in a case such as this, where the accused was charged with committing an assault in the same in a correctional facility, and would have direct contact with a member of the jury who is serving in a correctional officer capacity.
Mr. Gary, is there any case law in or outside of Delaware dealing with this kind of situation?
Your Honor, I've been unable to find a case on point.
It is at least arguable that the point where the juror should have informed the court that he was a correctional officer, I guess had duty on the defendant's cell block and didn't do it, that some adverse inference could be drawn. But not long after that information did come out, and the court did voir dire that juror and was satisfied that his status as a correctional officer wouldn't be an obstacle to an impartial, to his acting as an impartial juror. Your position, I gather, is that as a matter of law, this juror should have been removed, or is there discretion involved?
It's our position that when the juror came forward after the jury was sworn on the second day of trial and informed the court that he was a correctional officer, there was no inquiry by the trial court as to why he did not reveal that during the initial jury selection. There was no inquiry about that either at the trial or at the remand hearing. And there was no explanation given by the juror as to what circumstances had changed.
Which question during voir dire should he have answered? In other words, he should have come forward in response to what question?
If you know any of the witnesses who are correctional guards, it's our position that initially it's our position that the voir dire was extremely limited.
According to your briefs, the problem with the voir dire was that when the juror disclosed he was a correctional officer, the judge asked if the juror knew the other correctional officers, and that was the focus of the inquiry. But there was never any voir dire about whether the juror knew the defendant.
That is one of our primary positions, that the trial court had a duty to ensure a fair jury was selected, to inquire of the juror, do you also know the defendant, and obtain a response at that time. Now we're dealing with it 2 years later. Memory slide. For the juror to admit now that he knew the defendant would be tantamount to saying that he violated his oath as a juror.
But does the record reflect that the initial voir dire, at the beginning of the proceeding when the jury was being selected, that the question was asked, see if I can remember it. The defendant, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we're about to try a criminal case, blank versus blank, and it's going to last 3 days. Do you know the defendant, given his name, and any of the following witnesses, or any of the following witnesses who will testify? Was that asked?
Yes, that question was asked. And Justice Ridgely, it's arguable that not coming forward to that question would not have been a violation of the voir dire. It's our position that for some reason in the middle of the trial he felt it necessary to alert the court that he was a correctional officer. What circumstances had changed from the time he was sworn until that moment that he felt a need to tell the court? And there was never an inquiry as to that. The trial court, even on the remand hearing, did not inquire as to why he came forward at that moment.
All right, so in answer to my question, I gather you're position is that the judge had some discretion in these circumstances, but exercised it improperly.
Yes, Your Honor, that is my position. That under the circumstances of the case, even in the middle of the trial, the more prudent course would have been for the trial court to excuse the juror, replace with an alternate. The trial was a very short trial, and there would have been no harm. But I think based on the record, it clearly was plain error for the judge. Not only did it not exercise his discretion, but to allow the juror to continue to remain on the panel.
Were there alternates available to substitute for this juror?
Yes, Your Honor.
But the defense counsel at trial basically said he was satisfied.
The trial counsel did not prompt the court and said he was satisfied.
Is the record clear that defense counsel was under the impression he would have had to use a peremptory challenge rather than challenge for cause? That's alluded to in the briefs.
The record is unclear as to that, Your Honor. In the testimony.
That's something the defendant said. Is that correct? We don't have an affidavit from the trial attorney.
That's correct. The testimony was elicited at the remand hearing from the appellant that he had advised his attorney that the juror was a correctional officer. It's unclear whether that was in the middle of the jury selection, at the end of the jury selection. It's conceivable, based on the record, that the trial counsel made his own selections without consulting with counsel.
As I understand the defendant's testimony, whatever point in time he said he wanted the juror removed, the response the defendant attributes to his trial attorney is, we've used all of our peremptory challenges.
That is correct. And there was never the trial counsel never went to the court and said, I'd like to exercise for cause now because my client knows one of the jurors.
Well, did the defendant tell, according to his testimony, did the defendant tell his counsel that he knew this juror?
Yes, Your Honor. According to the testimony from the remand hearing, Mr. Hall advised his trial counsel he knew the juror, he wanted him off the jury, and he gave detailed explanation at the remand as to what he told his attorney and what his attorney told him. Moreover, he advised, he testified that on the second day of the trial, he was so upset and adamant about it, he was screaming in the lockup as you were coming, as the guards were bringing him into the courtroom.
Well, as so, you know, the trial counsel in this case has been disbarred. Was there any effort to locate him for the purpose of this remand hearing?
No, Your Honor. But, well, no. It's my understanding he has not been seen in a while. So, but I will tell the court that he was not.
Yeah, that's not a criticism. I was just wondering if he was still available.
It's fundamental that the person is convicted of a or tried by a jury of his peers, and it's our position that in this matter that fundamental right was fell by the wayside, not only by trial counsel but by the trial court, who had an opportunity when the juror come forward to make sure that there was a fair and impartial jury and inquire as to whether or not any improper influences have been taken back to the jury.
So we had two choices. As I understand it, we could look at this in a direct appeal based on the briefs you filed and conclude that it was a structural error to have this person sit on the jury and address it in a direct appeal. And the alternative would be to wait for a Rule 61 post-conviction motion that alleges ineffective assistance of counsel for not challenging this juror for cause. Are those the two choices we have?
Those are the yes, Your Honor. Those are the two choices. And for the Mr. Hall has to take the second option and address it in a Rule 61 petition. Mr. Hall suffers more prejudice because he's incarcerated on a 10-year sentence as an habitual offender. Obviously, there's no bond available. And depending upon how long it would take the trial court to issue a decision on Rule 61, we submit that that's unduly prejudicial. Notwithstanding,
well, at least this trial judge would likely say, wouldn't he, after making the findings on remand, that he would have denied a challenge for cause because he believed the juror?
That's possible, but it's our position that had the matter been addressed in a timely fashion, a trial counsel would have been forced to question his client and have his client's position placed on the record as to how he knew the juror. And based on that record in the middle of a trial, it's inconceivable that any trial judge would have allowed that juror to continue. And
Should the trial judge make any inquiry regarding the defendant knowing the correctional officer from his prior employment at Wawa?
No, Your Honor. That fact was never elicited until the remand hearing when I proposed the questions to the juror.
And he said he did not know the defendant from Wawa?
He said he did not know the defendant from Wawa, but he admitted that he did work at Wawa. He testified that he had the job that my client advised counsel of. Everything was corroborated except for the fact that he testified, I don't know Mr. Hall.
Is it theoretically or factually possible for the defendant to know and recognize the correctional officer, but the correctional officer not to know and recognize the defendant because Wawa customers, there's hundreds of them at least, and in the correctional facility there are hundreds of inmates.
It's conceivable, however, Mr. Hall testified that he had direct conversation with Mr. Baskow on more than one occasion, including the theft of the gas, which was admitted that by Mr. Baskow that he had to look out for people who were taking gas. And the state may bring this up in their argument, but if that is correct, then that raises the specter that Mr. Baskow may have taken into the jury inadmissible prior conduct evidence, which was unknown to defense counsel at the time or to the trial court.
And given a false answer as to, do you know the defendant initially?
Yes, in addition to both of those questions.
You want to save your remaining time, Mr. Gearing?
Your Honor, that may be prudent. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Williams.
Good morning, Justice Holland, Justice Jacobs, Justice Ridgeland. May it please the Court. There are two interrelated plain argument contentions being raised in this direct appeal. The first is that the trial judge should sua sponte have removed juror Jamie Baskow, a correctional officer at the Delaware Correctional Center, where the defendant, Mr. Hall, was incarcerated, from the March 2007 jury trial in this particular case. There wasn't any defense request to remove Baskow from the jury, so this claim of juror being impermissibly biased has been waived and may now be reviewed on appeal only for plain error.
Before we get to that,
yes.
Do you have any doubt that if there had been an application to remove this juror for cause, that it would be granted? Can you think of a reason why an application to remove the juror for cause would have ever been denied?
Yes, I think it probably would have been denied. He's not statutorily disqualified from serving on the jury. The response by Baskow to the general voir dire to the Veneri was he was asked if he knew anything about the case from any source. The Veneri was asked that. And then the Veneri was also asked if they knew the defendant, and Mr. Baskow did not come forward.
So I understand that. But looking at this with 2020 hindsight, if complete information had been known, it looks to me, if I understand the record, that the application to remove the juror, if it had been made timely at the beginning, would be, my client's charged with assault in a detention facility. This potential juror is one of my guards in that same facility, and I think that person should be removed for cause.
Well, I don't think that gets you to automatically removing somebody for cause.
No,
I think
I'm
something
not saying
else
automatically.
Is required.
I'm saying why doesn't it, not automatically, on the merits. I'm a prisoner. This juror is one of my guards. The subject matter of our entire trial is an assault within the facility where this person is guarding me. I'd like that person excused for cause. Now, on the merits, why would you say denied?
Well, I think it's denied because there aren't enough additional facts. There isn't a sufficient interaction. Mr. Baskow testified on the remand hearing in October of 2009 that he just had no recollection of Mr. Hall. It appears from the record that Mr. Baskow initially worked at Gander Hill for about 9 months. November 26th, he was transferred down to DCC. That was 2005, and this trial was in, 2006, and this trial was in March of 2007. So there was a window of about 3 or 4 months there. The logbooks indicate that on apparently 4 occasions, Mr. Baskow was assigned to this B tier in pretrial where Mr. Hall was being held prior to the trial. Mr. Baskow testified on remand that there's approximately 56, 57 inmates.
We've all read the record.
Right.
But my question, I suppose you're telling me all of this somehow ameliorates whatever otherwise looks like a challenge for cause. So let me ask you a second question. For some reason, these correctional guards were going to testify. And I know why. I mean, they didn't witness the event, but they were going to testify. So we have one correctional guard having to assess the credibility of other correctional guards. If we just say hypothetically, we have a juror who's a state policeman, and the two people who were going to testify were state policemen, and the application was, we're going to hear testimony from two state policemen. I don't want this juror to sit in my hypothetical who's a state policeman and have to weigh the credibility of fellow state police officers. Would that be grounds for cause?
Well, I think it's still going to depend on the facts and circumstances.
Well, we know the facts and circumstances of this case. Why wouldn't that be grounds for cause if the objection had been, I don't want one of the jurors who's a correctional officer assessing the credibility of two other correctional officers?
Well, I think then you're getting back to one of the initial questions is whether or not this is an occupational disqualification, and I don't think there are occupational disqualifications. Excuse me.
Now, Mr. Williams, let me just get to the same problem that Justice Holland has surfaced in a different way. Under your view of the law, what would have to be shown to constitute cause? Had there been a timely motion to excuse juror number 11 for cause?
Well, I think if he had a personal acquaintanceship with Mr. Hall that he acknowledged, or if this was an assault in a detention facility where the alleged victim was a correctional officer. Here, this was a fairly simple case. Mr. Hall admitted that he punched Mr. Neiman. The only question the jury had to resolve, the only factual issue, was whether or not Mr. Neiman had somehow provoked Mr. Hall's conduct.
All right, but let's go back to what your initial answer was, a personal relationship. We know that Mr. Hall said, I talked to him when he was an employee at Wawa, and apparently Mr. Hall said, I was one of those people that used to steal gas from Wawa. Isn't that Mr. Hall's position?
Yes, that's Mr. Hall's testimony at Marie Rand.
So if we're at the sidebar and the lawyer says, my client just told me he knows this juror who also happens to be a correctional officer in the same facility from his prior job at Wawa, and when the juror worked at Wawa, my client told him that he was stealing gas from Wawa, is that the type of prior relationship that would have someone excused for cause?
Well, that very well may, if he was aware of that and recognized that he was engaging in criminal conduct, yes. But
no,
that's
happened. We're talking about the judge at sidebar.
Yes.
The judge is hearing from the lawyers. Trying to figure out how these cases should work in the future, what does the judge at sidebar do when they say, I'd like to disqualify this juror for cause because my client knows him from his prior employment at Wawa, and my client told him as an employee at Wawa that my client was stealing gas?
Well, that may very well have resulted in a removal for cause. I mean, that would be a prudent thing for a judge to do, but that was not what happened in this case. None of that was revealed to the trial judge in 2007. Those allegations only came to light in the October 2009 remand testimony of Mr. Hall. The trial judge on remand found it particularly compelling that Mr. Hall, who claimed this ongoing acquaintanceship, Mr. Hall claimed this ongoing acquaintanceship with Juror Baskow, apparently sat through the jury selection, sat through the entire first day of the trial, and sat through most of the morning of the second day, and did not recognize Mr. Hall. The judge found that particularly poignant, that if there really was this much of an acquaintanceship, Mr. Hall should have at least recognized Mr. Baskow. Mr. Baskow,
but he did recognize him during the trial, at least according to his testimony.
Well, that's what he says after it's brought to the court's attention by Mr. Baskow, who informed a bailiff that he was a correctional officer. That's the first time that the record indicates, at least during the trial, that there's any recognition by Mr. Hall of Mr. Baskow on the jury.
I have one other question on the correctional officers that testified. One of them was it Sergeant Porter at the time?
Yes.
His rank was sergeant?
I think he's sergeant. He's the head of the transportation unit, I know, at the courthouse.
Well, he was sergeant when I was there. He may be
he may be a lieutenant now.
Do we know the rank of the juror?
I don't know, but he had only been an employee for, I think, about a year by the time of trial, so I doubt that, you know, he had moved along very far at that point.
Correctional officer, if you're not a sergeant and you're a lesser rank, you're either, what, a corporal or a correctional officer?
I think so. I don't know if there's a PFC or anything like that. There are corporals, so I know that.
Now, would it be a, would there be a challenge for cause if a superior officer was going to testify with a junior officer having to decide credibility on the jury?
Well, there may be if that was the case, and if the other facts indicated it was something significant. What Porter really testified to was that he didn't see the altercation. He came in afterwards, separated the individuals. He noticed that Mr. Neiman had an abrasion on the left side of his face and there was swelling. Mr. Hall did not tell Mr. Porter that Mr. Neiman had spit on him, and that was the important portion of Mr. Porter's testimony. The other officer, Officer Bryan, the only thing he really testified to was that when he was...
So that was a material issue of fact that the state relied upon Sergeant Porter to establish?
Well, I don't know if it was a material issue of fact. That became the defense when the defendant got on the stand. So I don't know that that was really known. At the beginning, all that was said in opening statement by defense counsel was that he admitted hitting Mr. Neiman but claimed that he was provoked. And then there was this testimony by Mr. Hall that Mr. Neiman had spit in his face before he punched Mr. Neiman. So that was the only real issue, whether there was provocation or not. The jury apparently credited some of Hall's testimony because they did not convict him of the first-degree robbery allegation, and Neiman's testimony was that after he was struck and fell down that Hall attempted to pull his sneakers off, but the jury acquitted Mr. Hall of that.
Mr. Williams, let's assume, the facts of the case, as they were presented, with one twist. Assume counterfactually that in this particular case there would be no a corrections officer testifying and juror 11 is still impaneled. In that case, there would be no risk that juror number 11 would be in any way biased by virtue of having to judge the credibility of a fellow correctional officer. Is that right?
Yes, I don't see that that would be a problem. Right. It'd just be based entirely on Mr. Neiman's testimony that he was struck by Mr. Hall.
Here, however, the one or more correctional officers were going to testify, so there was that risk, right?
Yes.
And that risk risk obviously is greater than the hypothetical where there's no risk. And my question is, why wasn't that risk sufficient? Simply to counsel sua sponte removal of this juror from the veneer?
Well, at some point you have to look at all the evidence, and this was cumulative evidence from these police officers. I mean, Mr. Neiman testified before either one of the the correctional officers, and Mr. Neiman said that, he didn't do anything to provoke Mr. Hall. He'd never seen Mr. Hall before. Mr. Hall had simply confronted him, told him that he couldn't wear those sneakers at the prison, and to give him the shoes. Mr. Neiman doesn't indicate that he made any response whatsoever, and suddenly Mr. Hall punches him in the face. So that was the testimony that the jury heard before either one of the correctional officers testified.
We're concerned not about the jury, but the judge.
Yes.
The claim here, I mean, the judge is faced with the situation where there was no motion initially. That is, there was no... no request to remove this particular juror by the lawyer. So the judge, if the judge did anything, would have to do it sua sponte. But once it became clear that Mr. Baskow was a correctional officer, the judge would have to know that there was a risk that was being taken by having juror number 11 on the panel. Isn't that correct? I mean, there's no way to avoid that.
No, that's a fact that's straightforward. I mean, it's on the jury questionnaire, and when the fact came to light, after Mr. Niemann had testified on the morning of the second day of trial, the first thing that the trial prosecutor pointed out was, well, Mr. Baskow accurately disclosed his employment on the jury questionnaire. If there was some nefarious motive on Mr. Baskow's part to be on this jury, why would he have gone the next step and disclosed to the bailiff on the first day that he was a correctional officer? Mr. Baskow testified pretty candidly at the remand hearing that he was a little shocked that he was on the jury. I guess he expected to be peremptorily challenged, but
peremptory challenged or challenged for cause?
Well, he didn't get into that, but I assume he was thinking he was going to be removed from the jury.
Let me follow up on Justice Jacobs' question, where you have no correctional officers testifying, but this still is a charge involving an assault in a correction facility. Isn't there a danger that, since he's not concealing the fact that he's a correctional officer, the other jurors are going to ask him or he's going to volunteer how things happen in correctional facilities? And to the extent there's a discussion about how things happen in correctional facilities generally, that would probably involve information that was not in evidence.
Well, that could be if people really did that. I don't know. I mean,
well, no, we're talking about the judge being aware that this person's a correctional officer and whether the judge should do something sua sponte. Wouldn't it occur to a judge, you know, this is a charge involving a correctional facility. This man works in the exact facility where it happened. We want to make sure the jurors only decide this case based on evidence in the courtroom. It would be prudent to excuse this juror now so we don't have the deliberations infected, for want of a better term, with a general discussion about what happens in correctional facilities.
Well, I guess that scenario could arise. Here, the charge is a little deceptive. It's assault in a correctional facility. Well, the assault didn't happen at the prison. The assault actually happened in the courthouse. There's a little lockup in the basement of the Kent County Courthouse. Baskow testified that he did not work on transportation. He wasn't acquainted with the transportation officers, and those were the officers who were actually involved in this. So I think jurors potentially asking what happens at the prison is not completely analogous, because this didn't really happen at the Delaware Correctional Center where Hall and Baskow both were. It happened at the Kent County Courthouse, and Hall said he really didn't have any knowledge of that. He wasn't involved in transportation. I mean, I think it's the kind of situation, if you had an assault in a school, are you going to automatically knock off all school teachers or school personnel because they work at a school and that's where the assault occurred?
I'd like to ask you a question to determine the scope of your position. Let's assume that the juror had a absolutely complete and accurate memory of his whatever was revealed by his employment record and the logs, that he basically worked on that tier, that delivered mail on that tier, and that the defendant was there for that period of time, and that was revealed. Is it your position that if that information had been disclosed, that there would not be at the trial a basis for a challenge for cause?
No, I think if you had those additional facts, that would probably be a real good argument to remove them for cause. You've got a personal acquaintanceship that's acknowledged by the juror, and I think that's different than what we have here.
I'm just talking about the employment records, not what Hall himself says. Just discount if the judge says that Hall is not credible, but these employment records show what they show. Would that be a basis for a challenge for cause?
Oh, the employment records, but not Mr. Baskow admitting that he was acquainted with Mr. Hall.
Well, whatever Baskow admitted and the employment records, would that be a challenge for cause?
I don't know that would, because Baskow still testified at remand. It was very helpful that we had the remand here because it fleshed out a lot of the facts. He still wasn't acquainted with him. He didn't dispute the accuracy of the logs and said, yes, you know, I distributed mail, but there's 50-some people. I don't have any personal recollection of Mr. Hall. I never wrote him up. We don't know what their charges are.
In terms of a challenge for cause, what is the standard to grant a challenge? Is it, does the trial judge have to find actual bias, that this juror cannot be fair and impartial, or does the trial judge have to find a risk, probability, where in the spectrum of he's uncomfortable? What's the rule that the trial judge should operate by to grant or deny a challenge of cause?
Well, unfortunately, I was never able to, in thinking about this, to decide where on the continuum if it is. If there's actual bias, obviously he goes out. When it gets a little further down the continuum, then I think the judge just has to use his judicial discretion. And, again, it's a facts and circumstances test. If there's any additional questions, I'll try to answer those.
Thank you.
Mr. Williams makes an interesting comment about it's good that we have a remand hearing because it flushed out a lot of facts. Well, that's the whole problem with this situation, that, you know, Mr. Hall was convicted of a jury and has suffered extreme prejudice as a result of that being incarcerated. And the record is just completely unclear as to what took place at the time of the trial. What should have taken place was that when Baskow came forward on the second day, he should have explained why he came forward, and he should have been removed by the trial court at that time to ensure that there was no undue prejudices or influences taken into the jury room at that time.
Let me make sure I get your drift, and if I don't, please tell me. What I'm hearing, or at least what you seem to be implying, is that testimony months after the conviction is basically unreliable, because at that point there are too many vested interests in shading the facts.
I don't want to say it's completely unreliable, but everyone who testifies does have a vested interest. I would submit that Baskow clearly has a vested interest in being called from the community back in front of the court.
As does your client.
As does my client. Yes, indeed. My client has a vested interest. And I would submit that based on the record developed, that Mr. Hall's testimony was credible, and that the trial court's finding that he was completely incredible is just not supported by the record. A lot of his testimony is corroborated by the testimony of the juror, and it was.
You would agree that it would be a lot that the problem of determining the credibility of the witnesses would have a greater degree of reliability. If this had been done during the trial, yeah, rather than months later, when everybody knows what's at stake and what they need to say in order to better their particular situation.
Yes, Your Honor. It's our position that Mr. Hall has suffered a detriment because it has been so long, and there was not a clear record developed at the time. And Mr. Williams also brings up that Mr. Hall testified at the trial, and, well, it's really not that significant because all the evidence points to his guilt. Well, that's the reason they have juries. And it should be remembered that Mr. Hall had to testify after the judge did not remove Mr. Baskow as a juror. It's our position that there was clearly an abuse of discretion here, that the law clearly shows that plain error was committed, and that I would ask the court to reverse.
Is it your position that the 64 times he had to look into the cell block where Hall was incarcerated and reading the envelopes and giving the mail to Hall, which he acknowledged that he had to do while he worked there, is sufficient to satisfy the definition of, or to require an affirmative answer to the question, do you know the defendant in a voir dire?
Yes, Your Honor.
Therefore, a false answer was given in response.
Yes, Your Honor. That's our position.
The voir dire was taking place, when the veneer was sitting there, the judge told them the nature of the charge was assault in a correctional facility. Didn't he?
Yes, that is correct. The charges were read, robbery in the first degree and assault in the detention facility.
So if the juror was sitting there, you would think the juror was probably saying, I wonder if I know this person.
That would be yes, that's a reasonable inference, that the juror would say, gee, I wonder if he's. Moreover, there would have been guards sitting beside the defendant as he's sitting there at counsel table. I don't know if trial counsel had civilian clothes on or not, or had the client wear civilian clothes or not, but clearly the officer had to know, the juror had to know that this occurred in a facility and he may have had contact with the defendant.
And at the end of the voir dire, they normally say, or is there any other reason that you think you should not sit on this case?
Yes. A lot of times members of the panel come forward not in response to any direct question, but they have they think they should come forward, which is I believe that Mr. Baskow realized he should have come forward for some reason, but the trial court never asked, why did you bring this to the court's attention? It was strictly focused on, do you know the correctional guards who are going to testify? And Sergeant Porter is still a sergeant, Your Honor.
Well, you're out of time, Mr. Geary. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. The court will take the matter under advisement, and we'll also have a brief recess.